You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
This episode of On Brand is brought to you by 2020. You know that stock photography look you hate? Like how all the models have those creepy, dead-behind-the-eyes smiles? 2020 lets you buy millions of intimate, authentic, real-world photos. They look like they came from someone's social media account you're jealous of, and they're proven to increase your brand's image. You get 5 photos with 2020's 1-week free trial at 2020.com/onbrand. That's the word 20, then the number 2 and the number 0.com/onbrand to get your first 5 photos free.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? This week's guest is Denise Lee Yone. Denise is the go-to expert on brand leadership for national media outlets, an in-demand speaker and consultant, and an influential writer. In addition to her new book, Fusion, she is the author of the best-selling book, What Great Brands Do, The 7 Brand-Building Principles That Separate the Best from the Rest, and the ebook, Extraordinary Experiences, What Great Retail and Restaurant Brands Do. News media, including Fox Business TV, CNBC, The Wall Street Journal, and NPR, called Denise when they want an expert point of view on hot business issues. She is a regular contributor to Harvard Business Review and Forbes, and has also written for Fast Company, Entrepreneur, Knowledge at Wharton, among others. Denise initially cultivated her brand-building approaches through several high-level positions in advertising and client-side marketing. She served as lead strategist at advertising agencies for Burger King and Land Rover, and as marketing leader and analyst for Jack in the Box restaurants and Spiegel catalogs. Denise went on to head Sony Electronic Inc.'s first ever brand office, where she was the vice president, general manager of brands and strategy, and garnered major corporate awards. Consulting clients include Target, Oakley, and Dunkin' Donuts. Denise, welcome to On Brand.
Wow. Well, thank you so much, Nick. You made me sound so good.
You have done all of that stuff. As a reminder,
and I'm only 12.
as a reminder for you, those are things that you've done. Now, I think that you are initially I thought you were the first repeat guest on the On Brand podcast, but I think the first repeat one I had was I had Patrick Hanlon, the author of Primal Branding, as my first. As my first guest, and I had him on again at show 100. So you are the second repeat guest in the history of the On Brand podcast, and we are pleased as punch to have you back.
Well, thank you, and congratulations on having such a long-running show. That's great.
It only happens with smart folks that are willing to come on every week and chat about branding like you. Now, I should add, as kind of further endorsement to your CV there, that you talk about the experts that call upon you in your bio, in that when I teach branding at the University of Iowa, one of my 2 textbooks is What Great Brands Do. So I can't say enough good things about your book, which is timely, as I'm also staring right now as we speak at another book by you.
Yes.
That I think a great place to start would be to tell folks a little bit about Fusion, how integrating brand and culture powers the world's greatest companies.
Yeah, so this is coming out very shortly, and it's exactly that. It's a book about how to integrate and align brand and culture. What else do you want me to say about it?
It's interesting because it's got, you know, what would you say first is kind of the elevator pitch about this book? I know what great brands do, Denise. I read the first book. Why do I need to read Fusion? I'm a very, very, very grizzled, time-sensitive elevator passenger.
Sure. You know, for a long time, brand and culture have been managed separately, but there's incredible power that comes when you create an interdependent and mutually reinforcing relationship between your external brand identity, basically how you are known and experienced outside, and your internal corporate culture, how you think and operate on the inside. And as the same as two atomic nuclei coming together and creating great power, brand and culture, when fused together, create great competitiveness for your organization because you are doing something that no one else can copy. It future-proofs your business because culture and brand are really the drivers of growth going forward. And it enables you to create real value for your customers and your employees.
You know, you got a little science-y on us there with your reference of the nuclei, but I will yes. see that and raise us some astrophysics because it does seem like these two areas, brand living usually somewhere in or around marketing, and then you've got your people, which in a traditional organization, it's going to be housed in your HR function. So these are two kind of separate silos in the traditional sense, but I pull astrophysics in because it does seem like there's some gravitational pull that they're coming together.
Ooh.
Yeah, there. Uh huh. So, what are some examples that you think of when people talk about this great power of this? I don't want to say synergy, because mm-hmm. you know I'll set off the alarm, the buzzword alarm here.
Right.
But when brand and culture come together, who is an exemplary brand there?
Yeah. Well, I will talk about the brand that I start the book off with, and that is Amazon. And the reason why I like to talk about Amazon is I think it surprises a lot of people because most people remember a couple years ago when the New York Times ran an expose about the culture at Amazon. And it was not a favorable article. It really talked about how toxic the culture seemed there. I think they used words like bruising and painful. Oof. And they talked about people, you know, crying at their desks and being yelled at. And so I think a lot of people assume that Amazon has a really bad culture, but I think it's quite the opposite. They have a culture that enables people who enjoy a challenging and, you know, kind of demanding workplace, enables them to thrive. And it channels that energy towards innovation in service of customers. So, you know, I think, so Amazon's, you know, mission is to become Earth's most customer-centric company. And I think as a brand, they really want to be known for innovating new products and new services and new content and new things we can't even imagine right now that will meet our needs, our, you know, customers' needs and wants. And what's great about the culture in Amazon is that it's completely focused on just that as well. And so everything that the company does in the way that it thinks and operates inside is exactly how it appears on the outside. And the company has, you know, certainly grown both in size and profitability and revenue, particularly as a result.
Well, and when you initially said that, and you said that Amazon surprises people, I also think it surprises from the brand perspective, because I think we get exceptional service from Amazon, but they're almost so every day that we use them as a bit of a utility. So I think categorizing them as a strong brand and why is kind of a different direction, but totally makes sense when you kind of draw out how they do that.
Yeah, well, I think that here's why I consider them a great brand. Number one, at least for pretty much everyone I know, when you want to buy something, the very first place that you think of looking for it is Amazon. Like, so the, in terms of strength of awareness and salience and kind of just being top of mind for everyone, they definitely have it. And then second, and again, this is for most people I know, it might not be the case for everyone, but most people, when they shop on Amazon or when they buy stuff from Amazon, they really don't pay attention much to price. I mean, they don't think, okay, could I buy this thing from the store down the street for cheaper? No, they think the service and the convenience and the seamlessness of the experience at Amazon is well worth, you know, whatever few pennies or dollars difference I might save by buying it from somewhere else. And so to me, that's real brand power, because if you can basically take price out of your equation, or at least, you know, charge more than other people, or reduce people's price sensitivity because of your brand, that to me is power in your brand. So it is every day, but I think that's the power of the Amazon brand.
So what are the components of moving towards this integration of this fusion? See what I did there. So what are the steps of moving towards this fusion of brand and culture?
Well, in my book, there are two parts, and the first part is laying the foundation, and then the second part, there are five strategies or specific steps you can take. And so the movement towards fusion starts with a foundation, and the foundation of the foundation is is identifying and clearly articulating your overarching purpose and single set of core values for your organization. So why you exist and how you're going to operate, and your purpose and values should apply to both your organization on the inside as well as your brand identity on the outside. And so you start there. You know, I think that having those two elements to drive, align, and guide everything you do is so important. And then you need to assess, like, how far off your culture is from living out the purpose and values. And then probably the most important foundational step is, as a leader of the organization, you need to assume responsibility for cultivating culture and ultimately achieving brand culture fusion. To one of the points you made earlier, Nick, I think that most companies, most CEOs will delegate culture and culture building into HR, and brand building into marketing. And as long as they can kind of check the box and say, okay, those two departments have their thing going, we're all set, they think that they have set their organization up well. And that's just not the case. I think as a leader driving the organization, you need to prioritize brand culture fusion. You need to assume that it's your responsibility to make sure it happens. And sure, the functional areas of your company will actually do much of the tactical implementation, but if you don't make it a priority, it's not going to happen. So laying the foundation really is the first, most important step to brand culture fusion.
So,
and then, I was going to say, or should I go on, or should we pause there?
Go on to the next step. I can remember my question. I don't want to break up the steps here, too.
Okay. So then part two introduces five strategies for achieving brand culture fusion. And the first four are designed for organizations who have a pretty clear brand identity, or at least a brand aspiration, and want to and need to align their culture to that. And so the four strategies, the first one is to organize and operate on brand, meaning you want to use your organizational design and your operational processes to communicate and cultivate your cultural priorities. Then the next step is to create culture-changing employee experiences. Just as customer experience must be deliberately designed and managed on an ongoing basis, you need to do the same thing for your employee experiences so that your culture really comes to life for your employees. The next step is to sweat the small stuff. And by small stuff, I mean rituals, artifacts, policies, procedures, all of the things that seem to be small, mundane aspects of organizational life actually have a big impact on culture. And so you want to sweat the small stuff. You want to design those aspects to cultivate your desired culture. And then the fourth strategy is to ignite your transformation through employee brand engagement. So really helping your employees know in their heads, believe in their hearts, and be equipped in their hands and feet to know what your brand stands for and how to interpret and reinforce it in their actions and behaviors. So those are the four strategies if you want to align your culture to your brand. And then the fifth strategy is if you want to align your brand to your culture. You know, if you don't really have a clear brand, or you've maybe really not developed your brand, but you have a great culture, then it's a matter of leveraging your culture to differentiate your brand, and or using your purpose and values to inspire specific external actions like a new product or a new service or a new initiative that really brings them to life for your customers. So those are the five strategies or five steps to, and I should say that they're not really mutually exclusive. I think you need to do all of them in order to align and integrate your brand and your culture.
Well, I think that last point is really fascinating. The fifth one, organizations mm-hmm. that have a strong culture, because I feel like you see that in organizations, especially in smaller businesses out there. I feel like, well, we know this, we have a strong culture, but then they can't communicate that externally. Are there other examples in the book that you cite of this, of those that mm-hmm. maybe don't have as strong mm-hmm. a brand, but have been able to leverage the culture?
Yeah. So, you know, I think like educational institutions, and maybe academic or scientific institutions. You know, my husband works for a biotech company, and I think that, you know, they have been much more intentional about what kind of culture they want. And they actually, frankly, they haven't been doing a great job of it. But, you know, I think they've been much more, you know, focused on how they operate internally than really what they want their brand to be known for. You know, because as scientists, it's all about the work and it's all about the integrity of the research. But I think that, you know, just organizations in general that have a really strong culture that maybe, you know, don't get the credit for it. You know, so one of the examples I talk about in that chapter is REI, the sporting good outdoor retailer. And I think that, you know, people who really know REI know that they have a very unique culture that's all rooted in the love of the outdoors, and their mission is to bring the excitement and adventure of the outdoors to their customers. But I think that many people just think, oh, they've got great stores and great stuff. And so I think that over the last few years, the company has been a lot more deliberate about letting people know about their culture and really using that as a way to differentiate their brand. So that's, you know, the Opt Outside campaign that they run now during the holiday season. That's really what, you know, one of the ways that they have taken their culture and shared it with their customers. It really, that started with that, with the leaders of the company saying, hey, you know what, maybe we should close our doors on Black Friday. And instead of making our employees work inside, we should pay them to go outside. Because if we truly love the outdoors, and, you know, if we truly are invested in celebrating that among our employees, we should do this. And so then, I think they said, well, let's do this for everyone. You know, if we close our doors for our employees to get them outside, let's encourage customers to do the same thing. And so it's a great example of a company that has taken their culture and used it to differentiate themselves from a lot of other, not only retailers, but really lifestyle brands at this point.
That's a great point and a great example. When you were going through some of the foundational steps, it did remind me, I mentioned that I use your previous book, What Great Brands Do, in my branding course. And one mm-hmm. of my favorite questions, and I think I reference it in both of my books, when you talk about understanding, identifying that overarching purpose, that why are you here, you have one of my favorite prompts to this, and that is, you know, most of us can answer what business we're in, but you, that powerful follow-up of what business are you really in, I think really gets a lot of people going. So I have no question to ask you. I just wanted to say that question again out loud for the listeners, because I think that's a really valuable way to get jump started if you are stuck with your brand and identifying what that purpose is.
And I will say, Nick, that that relates to the comment you made about small businesses who maybe struggle to articulate what their brand is all about. I think sometimes it's because small business owners or entrepreneurs will think about what they're selling. So we do this product, or, you know, or I mean, we sell this product, or we do this service. And I think when you ask yourself, okay, but what business are we really in? Mm-hmm. Why does this product or why does a service really matter? Then I think you get to, okay, what is really unique and special about our brand? And that really is the overarching purpose that I was talking about before.
Well, and I'd say the other problem in there too, especially specific to the small business example, is that a lot of times that question has been answered in the entrepreneur, in the founder's head, but then everybody else, as you add more people, I'm working for a shoe company, instead of understanding that it's Zappos and it's about, you know, really not about the shoes, it's about service. So I think it becomes kind of a bit of archaeology to help get that out for an existing brand that has some of those questions answered, just maybe not as far down.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
Well, and I also, it never occurred to me the parallels of when you think organizationally about, and it is aptly titled with fusion, because you have these areas that are oh so important for organizations of culture and brand. And I feel like they are suffering when they're siloed in our org charts of culture lives in HR, and it's, but it affects many different things. It cuts across that. And brand, because I didn't see those parallels between brand and culture, because I live mostly on brand stuff. Mm-hmm. But both, I mean, I'm the first one to say that brand lives in should live in every department in some aspect. Just looking at that and seeing that there might be a bit of work to do there in making that fusion happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, you know, I was just talking with someone else about this, that to some leaders and in some companies, it's quite intuitive that, well, of course, our brand and culture are inextricably linked, you know. So like you look at like Southwest Airlines or Starbucks, you know, or even like, you know, maybe Amazon to some extent or whatever. But then I think that there are a lot of business leaders and lots of organizations where this is a really new idea to them. The fact that you would want and that you need to integrate and align your brand and culture. And I think that a lot of the surprise or kind of, you know, the question about it comes from misperceptions about culture and culture building. I think that a lot of people don't understand what culture is or how you build it. And so when you start talking about aligning with your brand, they're like, well, wait a minute. First of all, doesn't culture just kind of happen organically? And, you know, as long as everyone's nice to each other, isn't that enough? And it's like, well, no, you know, if you beyond a certain baseline, you really need to have a unique culture in order to get the unique specific results that you're looking for. But then I think it's, you know, it's also a matter of understanding, and maybe that's the next point, is that your culture doesn't need to be a certain type of culture. You know, there's a lot of existing rhetoric on culture that says your managers must be nice and supportive and benevolent, and everyone needs to feel like a family, and we're all, you know, happy and fun. And going back to where we started this conversation, Amazon, it shows you that you don't have to have that kind of culture in order to have a successful organization and to have employees that really are engaged in their work. You know, so I think a lot of folks might think, oh, so I really need to think more and be more deliberate about the unique culture I want to cultivate, not just this baseline of a decent culture, but what are, you know, what is the unique things that I need to build in here in order to have a really, you know, valuable and sustainable culture.
Well, and I feel like you see that too, the kind of people operating from the preconceived notions. I feel like you see sometimes companies doing Amazon or doing like Google's culture instead of doing their own. Look, we revamped the cafeteria. We have culture now. Instead of the kind of advice of of you do you.
Yes. Well, and I think, you know, Nick, there's an interesting parallel between that aspect of culture and brand building, in the sense that I think that a lot of folks, when they go to build their brand, they look at what other people are doing and like, oh, we should run a Twitter campaign like that, or we should be on the Super Bowl because that's where all the big brands advertise. And so they try to imitate these kind of these external things that these brands are doing, whether or not they're really right for them. And frankly, a lot of them aren't right for every other company. You know, they're not right because usually you can't afford, or, you know, they're just not appropriate for you, but also because they're not, to your point, they're not you. You know, you are trying to be a brand that is, you're trying to do things on a brand side that aren't really authentic to you. I think the same thing happens with culture. So people will say, oh, you know, this company serves free beer on Fridays. We should do that too. And it's like, well, why? Why? You know, so I think that's the same. People want it to be easy to be able to do things like that, and it's not.
Wow. I mean, that's such another fascinating parallel between these big items like brand and culture, of because we're looking for the easy checkbox. Now that's done. We have beer on Friday and people can wear jeans. Everybody's happy.
We
have culture.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, it's so important not to operate from those preconceived notions. The alternative is more work, and I think that's a daunting task ahead to many. So what's
it is? No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to ask, with that daunting task, what is, if someone out there is listening, what's one thing that they could do after listening to this that is a more it moves towards that fusion of brand and culture?
Yeah. Gosh, there are all sorts of immediate actions you can take. I would maybe, point people to their looking at their people decisions. You know, people decisions meaning who they hire, who they promote, who they fire, and specifically, is there someone in your organization that you really need to get rid of because they are not part of they're not aligned with the culture that you really want? I think a lot of companies will tolerate high performers because they produce results without realizing that if that high performer does not align with your culture, not only are they wreaking havoc on your culture and, you know, maybe making it a very unproductive and unpleasant workplace, and misdirected and unfocused, but they're also signaling to everyone else that it doesn't matter whether you embrace the culture here at this company. You know, we might have core values, but it doesn't matter whether you follow them or not. And so I think that one thing that would be that you could do is just look at the people in your organization. And do we have the right people on the bus? Do we have people who really embrace the kind of culture that we want and who take responsibility for advancing that, whether they are a frontline employee or whether they're an executive committee member, and maybe make a decision to let someone go because they're not.
Definitely have to have the right people moving in the right direction. Denise, as we wrap up, I did not prep you for our final question, but
lovely. Okay, I'm so bad with impromptu.
You're a pro at this, being a return guest, especially someone that talks about brands all the time. Our final question is always, what's one brand that has made you smile recently?
Oh,
It can be a bad smile, too. I give people the freedom. It can be that shaking my head, can't believe this happened, knowing smile, too.
Gosh, you know, I could name all of the, like, you know, expected answers, you know, Starbucks, my like daily delight, and Amazon every time I, you know, I press the button and things appear on my doorstep. It's great. I have discovered this company called Bombas that claims to have the world's softest socks. And I discovered them because my husband really like socks. And for his birthday, I decided I was going to get him the world's softest socks. And they are true to their word. Like, I actually snuck in a pair for myself when I bought my husband a couple pairs also. And I'm like, wow, these are really great socks. And I think that, you know, just having like kind of a fun, clear positioning like that, it brings me delight. So I think I was smiling not only because my feet were happy, but because as a brand person, I thought that Bombas really had done a great job with their brand.
Awesome. Great story. Great socks. Denise, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, so please go to my website, DeniseLeeYon.com, and there you can then find out all the great information about Fusion, my new book that's coming out, as well as my first book, What Great Brands Do, as well as all sorts of downloadable materials and resources, videos, my blog links there. So that's a great way to find out more about me and also to navigate to buy my book, if I could be so bold as to ask.
Do it.
but then, you know, on social channels, I'm usually Denise Lee Yon everywhere, and particularly in Twitter. I'm pretty active on Twitter, and so that's a great way to get a hold of me, Denise Lee Yon on Twitter.
Awesome. We will link up to all of that in our show notes. Denise, thanks for joining us on Brand.
Thanks so much, Nick.
And before we go, I always like to flip the microphone around to our community. This week, I'm going to remind our community that I will be in Austin, Texas this coming weekend for South by Southwest Interactive, where I will once again be doing the On Brand podcast live on stage, where we're going to be talking with some special guests about brand activism. Hope to see you there. And if you like something that you heard on this episode or another, if you'd like have a question you'd like one of our guests to answer, let me know on Twitter using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may just hear your thoughts right here on the show. Thanks again to our sponsor, 2020, your source for on-brand photography for your brand. Get 5 photos with 2020's 1-week free trial at 2020.com/onbrand. That's the word 20, then the number 20.com/onbrand. On Brand is a production of Brand Driven Digital, helping complex organizations simplify their branding and marketing to unlock growth. More, including links to everything Denise and I talked about at branddrivendigital.com. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.